Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Jones, Bowden. He's got it. England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Our look back at the first day's play in the England against New Zealand Test match at Lord's. And what a day. What a bizarre day. What an extraordinary sequence of events. With 17 wickets falling, with England batting second, nudging towards the New Zealand target of 132, but still 16 behind, with only 3 wickets left. And all sorts of strange incidents, like a debutant taking 4 wickets and a fielder diving over the line, getting concussion and being replaced by another player who was in Manchester yesterday and had to travel down the motorway to come to the ground and hasn't yet had to bat. I mean, you can't make it up, Simon, can you? Cricket just has an incredible way, especially Test cricket, has an incredible way of throwing up extraordinary narratives.
Well, we were all looking at Brendan McCullum's first day as England coach, Ben Stokes' first day as England captain. It was all going so well for England. At one stage, you think, yeah, they're going to win this game. They're in a winning position. They were past 50 in reply to 132. The pitch looked okay. I mean, there's a bit in it. And then suddenly, it's another one of those England collapses, 7 for 41. Mind you, New Zealand had a 7 for 45 collapse earlier. And in between, it was 146 for 3. So it felt as though, you know, there was a bit of nibble early on this morning. There was some swing. There was something in it for the bowlers all day. But it did seem to flatten out. And, you know, batters were able to prosper. And then suddenly, 1 wicket goes down. And it all changes around. It's a familiar story for England. Their batting looks incredibly fragile. And now the game's right back in the balance. At one stage, England looked, you know, they must have been, you know, short odds to win the game. And now you'd say New Zealand probably are in the better position in the match.
Mm. And as you say, I mean, England, when New Zealand were 46 or 7, I mean, you're rubbing your hands thinking, well, this is all over. They often say, don't they, that one terrible session can't win a test match, but it can lose a test match, or one session can certainly change a game, but it'll tend to lose a game rather than win a game. That sounds a bit kind of cryptic, but basically, if you do get bowled out for 70 or something, you're going to lose. And somehow New Zealand managed to recover to 132. It was funny, wasn't it? It was an innings of two distinct halves of batsmen who looked completely ill at ease, poking at balls very tentatively for the first 20 overs or so. Was it that commemoration to Shane Warne at 23 overs to mark the number that he used to use wear on his back? that sort of seemed to change, and New Zealand suddenly, having seen the players all standing to attention and very much kind of in tribute to Warne, after that the New Zealanders played shots and managed to scrabble their way to 132, which looked wholly insubstantial, but nevertheless was an improvement on 46-7. And suddenly 132 seems a long way off when you lose 5 wickets for 8 runs in the middle of your innings.
I mean, here's a stat from Andy Zaltzman. Teams who've scored 135 or fewer in their first innings in a test match, 22 have won and 105 have lost. So, you know, overwhelmingly, you don't need to be a cricket nut really to realise that 132 is insubstantial in your first innings. And generally speaking, far more often than not, you go on to lose the game. But there is a chance here that New Zealand could win it. I mean, that 23 over mark came just before lunch, didn't it? And then New Zealand obviously regrouped. They thought about it and they went out and played some shots after lunch. Jameson actually was caught at fine leg quite soon after lunch, but they kept playing strokes. De Grandhomme played well. Southee played a few shots as well. And Bolt, they've got some quite good strikers down the order, haven't they, as well? Those pace bowlers who can sort of get into a bit. Well, I tell you what it reminded me of a little bit. It didn't totally get out of hand. It reminded me a little bit of a couple of things that happened last summer. First, India here at Lord's, when Shami and Bumrah on the final day just started playing shots and they got away with it. And they got, in that one, they set up an Indian victory because they actually produced a really damaging late order partnership, and England just couldn't cope with it on the final day. But also, it also reminded me slightly of Shardul Thakur on the first day of the Oval Test match last year, yeah, where he played a few shots, got 50 quickly. And okay, it didn't dramatically change the game, but they got from something like, you know, 110, 120 up to 190. And it just gave them something to bowl with and kept them in the game. And it was a bit like that, wasn't it? 45 for 7, you're just out of the game, really. But to get up to 130, but even then, the idea of being able to fight back from being bowled out for 130, especially when the opposition are, what were they? England were 92 for 2. You know, England totally in control of the game. I thought Root's dismissal was actually quite key because he was playing nicely and then he perhaps just got a bit too ambitious, trying to force De Grandhomme and firm nick, low down, good catch by Southee. And from then on, the game turned round and dramatically as well. England lost 5 for 8 and England supporters, you know, it was same old, wasn't it? But even then, it still felt remarkable day's cricket. I think not least because of that. If you look at the scoring patterns in the day, you know, 45 for 7, the 153 in the middle, and then another 7 wickets going for 40 runs. It almost defied logic. I mean, you've bowled here a lot, Yoz. I don't know whether it did as much when you played, whether it swung as much or just nibbled as much as when you played. I mean, there was something in it all day for the bowlers. There was swing, for example, all day, and there was still movement, you know, late on as well.
Yeah. Look, I mean, how does this day compare to the history of cricket? Well, 17 wickets falling in a test match at Lord's on the first day. Has that happened before? Well, it has. It actually happened against Ireland, the England-Ireland game last year. Or was it 2 years? No, sorry, it was 2 years ago, wasn't it, when that happened?
2019 it was.
2019. It was after the World Cup, wasn't it, when that happened. And the only other time when more than 17 wickets had fallen in a day's play at Lord's, the first day, was in, I think, 1896. So it is a pretty rare occurrence. What do you put it down to? How do you explain it? Well, I would say, and, you know, as you say, I bowled a lot at Lord's. I think it's a combination of the ball doing a little bit, right? That's the first thing. It was doing just a little bit. When you put that against the slope at Lord's as well, which gives bowlers a bit more confidence, they know that the little bit of movement they're extracting off the pitch will be exacerbated by the slope. You add that into it. You also add in the fact that the New Zealand batsmen haven't had much practice. A few of them have come from the IPL. Playing white ball cricket is no preparation for red ball cricket. I also think there's another little thing, and that is that when you're a team and your captain wins the toss and elects to field, the bowlers are under pressure. But if your captain loses the toss and you're put into the field, you almost think, if there's a little bit in the pitch, okay, we've got an opportunity here. So there's a mental sort of psyche to it as well. If you're in the field by choice, you feel under pressure as a bowler. If you're in the field by default, by being put into the field by the other captain, you almost feel if there's something in the pitch that and a little bit of cloud cover, that there's an opportunity here. And England grabbed that opportunity. And, you know, I suppose the final thing to say about why have so many wickets fallen is you are talking about some of the finest operators of seam and swing the game has ever seen, certainly from the England perspective, Anderson and Broad, and to a lesser extent, Southee and Bolt, two of the finest bowlers that New Zealand have ever produced. And Jameson, actually, is a damn fine bowler as well, yeah. Was man of the match in the World Test Championship final against India and basically won the game, got Kohli out twice and so on. So you are talking about some fantastic bowlers armed with very, very precise statistics, data about where to bowl, people who know the Lord's slopes and kind of contours pretty well. So, and against batsmen who are either a little bit rusty or not very good.
Yeah. What did you think of Matthew Potts on his debut?
Excellent.
Remarkable debut. Four for 13.
I thought he was absolutely excellent. I thought he kept it simple. In fact, interestingly, I spent a bit of time today with Angus Fraser, the former England and Middlesex bowler, and he sort of saw some similarities in himself with Potts. Keep it simple, don't try too much, bowl a good length and line, let the wicket do the work, and it did, you know, and he bowled an immaculate line, and then I think he only conceded a couple of singles in his first three or four overs, made them play, bowled quite full, looked as if he was reaping the benefit of some good rhythm and confidence from six championship games for Durham. So, you know, overall, I thought he did superbly well. Obviously helps having your teammate Ben Stokes at mid-off to encourage you, and the fact that he came on to bowl when already the New Zealanders were in trouble. But he captured his opportunity brilliantly.
For those who haven't seen him bowl, and you know, people will now more, won't they? They'll watch the live coverage, they'll watch the highlights. I mean, how would you characterise his bowling?
Tall. And a decent pace, 83 miles an hour, 82 miles an hour, doesn't look to swing the ball. And I think that's a big advantage, actually, in especially early in your career, because swing is such a fickle art, in a way, and you never know from one day to the next whether the ball will swing. If you're not a swing bowler, if you're a line bowler, which he is, and, you know, similar to, as I say, Angus Fraser or, you know, Glenn McGrath, somebody like that, even Broad, in a way, you know, you can set your ball up and you know roughly where it's going to go if you're not relying on swing. So he's got a channel that he executes extremely well. He likes to bowl that area just around and about off stump and just sort of on a length or slightly back of a length. He's got enough pace. It's not quick, but it's the old-fashioned cliche. He bowls a heavy ball. He gets a high action. He puts a lot of shoulder and back into his deliveries, so it comes up off the pitch with a bit of extra bounce and sort of venom. And he just keeps an immaculate line and length at a decent pace. So I'd say he's a typical English seam bowler.
He's probably not an England number eight, though, is he? I mean, batting at number eight, I mean, he bats at Durham at nine. That's probably, you know, that's county level. He's batting here at number eight. And actually, his dismissal, I mean, it was a bit of a wake-up, wasn't it, a Test cricket. But I mean, Bolt bounced him out and he actually played it like a number 10, number 11, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's the case. And probably it happens in county cricket that you don't see bowlers of someone like Bolt's or Southee's expertise, their ability to get the bouncer up from not that short with a bit of extra effort. You don't get that many good bouncers bowled in county cricket, do you? There'll be a few, obviously, but there's not a lot of pace in county cricket generally. And number eight or nine, he's at number eight or nine for a reason, and that's because he doesn't pick up the good balls as well as somebody higher up the order. And, you know, actually tall batsmen, and Potts is quite tall, they have trouble, more trouble with the short ball than a shorter player who's used to the ball, you know, chest high and above. But a tall batsman wouldn't get too many bounces head high. So, you know, if you're a tail ender, they're probably not very good at playing it.
Jimmy Anderson today, I mean, he was in sight of another fifer. I mean, remarkable, isn't it, really? I mean, he's into his 40th year. And he actually, I mean, two batters out, caught on the pull today. I mean, he bounced a couple of them out, albeit they were playing quite extravagantly. And you could test those lower order players out with a short ball because he had men back and you knew they were going to play some shots. What about Anderson today then? I mean, I don't know. He doesn't have a point to prove, does he, in his 40th year? But he was obviously hurt and upset by the fact he was left out for the West Indies tour. How did you assess him? Because actually, you look at his figures, actually, it's unusual for him to go for 66 from 16 overs. Admittedly, they were playing some shots. Was that because of that, the match situation? Is he a bit more hittable with a slightly older ball now if players are playing shots against him? How do you assess him?
I think those are all good points. I think you run out of superlatives for his first spell. Six overs, only one scoring shot, a clip through mid-wicket for four and two wickets. And he just never leaves that really awkward area. I thought he pitched the ball up a little bit more today and he got a little bit of movement. He got those two wickets. He never gave the batsman anything. They were a bit tentative, inevitably. But, the pace was good. The accuracy was, as we know. I like the way that he got a couple of wickets with bouncers because that's not kind of generally a type of ball that he bowls very much. And I've often thought he should bowl more in sort of later spells, especially, just to keep the batsmen guessing a little bit more and keep them from planting their front foot hard down the wicket. So that was well done. Yeah, I mean, he's going to get slogged a bit. I mean, tail-end batsmen, Southee and De Grando and people like that, they're good players. And, Southee's just been at the IPL. A length ball from an Anderson 82 miles an hour is just what batsmen want in the IPL, tail-enders especially, when they're in the last bits of the T20 innings. So he is a bit hittable, I suppose. And he doesn't have a slower ball and things like that, really. Yeah, he is going to go for a few runs, and that's where I suppose England do need that cutting edge of a Jofra Archer and Mark Wood, who can really give the tail enders a bit of a hurry up and sort of almost scare them out. You do need that when the ball gets a bit older.
Mm-hmm. One aspect of England's fielding effort today actually was how well they caught. I mean, that was a stunning catch by Johnny Bairstow to get things going. I mean, he's been a feature of England's out cricket in the last two or three years. They seem to, they have dropped a lot of close catches. Bairstow taking three in the slip cord. I mean, all very different ones. One, I mean, absolutely stunning catch. I mean, if you haven't seen it, then watch it on the highlights. Brilliant grab away to his left hand side. When I was watching it with the naked eye, I thought that just can't possibly be out. It just looked too low, too difficult. But magnificent grab, and then the one which he parried, which would have looked bad actually if he dropped it, because it was a relatively straightforward catch, but he managed to dive forward and scoop it off the ground. Everything was going his way, and then a catch low down as well. So three catches, and a good catch from Ollie Pope, and also a good catch from Ben Foulkes to give Potts his first Test match wicket, and what a wicket as well to get rid of Kane Williamson. A bit out of sorts, Kane Williamson, at the moment, with not many runs in the IPL. He's been back to New Zealand with the birth of his second child. Naught playing for the New Zealand team against the Counties 11 at the weekend, and then now a low score out for two. Test match average of 53. I'm class player, fantastic player, but perhaps just in one of those runs of form that all batters get from time to time. But again, very good catch from Ben Foulkes. I just wonder whether eventually, I don't know, I mean, Foulkes is he's an interesting character, isn't he? He's still there overnight. He'd come out tomorrow and score some runs and perhaps take England beyond New Zealand's total. I wonder whether, whose place is vulnerable? Is Bairstow's place vulnerable with Harry Brook breathing down his neck and scoring all those runs? Or is Foulkes' place vulnerable with Bairstow moving back to keep wicket and Brook slotting in at number five? I think they'll give it some time. But good from Foulkes. And a chance for him tomorrow, actually. Okay, it might just be in a cameo because he hasn't got a lot left to play with, just to sort of boost his case.
I think that in the end, Bairstow will end up with the gloves, actually, because I don't think England will be able to afford to have the luxury of a keeper who, Foulkes is a decent batsman, but he's not a match-altering batsman, generally. he's a steady accumulator, decent player.
He's got a first class average of 39, Yoz.
I know he's okay. He's a good player, but I think that that number seven spot is a spot for a game changer, and it might be a bit low. I suppose seven might be low for Bairstow, but I think you want someone there who can take attack on or capitalise on a good situation. And Folks, to me, is just a bit orthodox, and he's a good look. I mean, I don't want to criticise him really because he's a good cricketer, but
yeah,
I just wonder with England and this sort of general fragility of their batting, whether they can afford a class keeper who is a decent batsman but not a game changer. I think they might eventually revert to either Butler or Bairstow at seven, and then play six batsmen, because you know, as we were saying yesterday on the preview, especially in England, you can lose buckets of wickets in quick succession when a bowler gets on a roll or the clouds come in and the duke ball starts behaving like a slippery snake. And if you don't have a little bit of ballast down the order, you're vulnerable. And England are, aren't they? And, you know, they're still not even ahead, despite bowling New Zealand out for 132.
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah, so here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good. Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Okay, Yoz, Lees and Crawley opening the batting, 132 on the board for New Zealand, few overs to face until tee. They got to tee, 19 for no wicket. They progressed the partnership, got to 59. And then Zach Crawley discussed, I mean, he produced actually some of the cleanest batting of the day, some lovely drives, you know, he looked in control. And then lo and behold, the tempter from Jameson, that wide-ish full delivery, nicked off, gone. We've seen it so many times before.
Yeah, and I was in a box talking about it with one ex-professional and one current professional player, and they both sort of hung their head in dismay and said, oh, he's like James Vince. And there is a little bit of the similarity. I mean, it is exasperating because he has got so much ability, but he's still not recognising when is the time to play certain shots. And Kyle Jameson looks to swing the ball away. He's a tall bowler, but he looks to pitch it up and swing the ball away. He's bowling from the nursery end. He's bowling a length. The ball has done a fair bit in this day so far. Not extravagantly, but it's done enough. Don't drive on the up, outside off stump. If it's full, and Ollie Pope got a ball soon after that from the same bowler, which was a half volley, and he hit it for four. Good shot. Crawley was chasing one. It was three, four stumps wide of off stump. So, I don't know, 8 inches wide of off stump. And he was chasing it. It wasn't a half volley. It was at the nursery end, bowled from the nursery end. So it's going to go away from you a bit if the natural geography of the pitch, you know, does its usual thing. So it was a very ill-judged shot. And he stood there and he waited for the decision and he contemplated reviewing it. That was almost, oh God, have I done it again? That was a sort of, oh no, can I maybe get away with this? No, you can't.
It was a bizarre moment there, actually, because I think everyone knew he nicked it. I mean, even he did. It was a strange one. Or perhaps he thought, did I hit that? Or did my bat hit the ground? And he went down to talk to his partner in New Zealand. We're off celebrating. It looked like a clear nick, and it was. I think it was just such a deflating moment because he played really well. It was again, and it's a feature of his play, and he's a delightful player to watch when he's striking the ball, and he's one of these players you sort of beguiling. You want him to succeed, really, because he's such a pleasure to watch. But I suppose it's just that frustration. I mean, back in the day, you'd think of someone like David Gower, you know, who's a far more successful player, probably, you know, will end up being a far more successful player overall than Zach Crawley. But he was similar, wasn't he, David? He would delight you, and frustrate you, whereas Zach Crawley probably delights you, frustrates you. There's a bit more frustration there than with David Gower, but it's all what you get with a player like that. But probably, you know, to succeed, you just need to be a little bit tighter. Well, that's one side of the coin. What about the other? What about Alex Lees? I mean, he was set up batting down the pitch and well outside of off stump as well. And I was on actually commentating with Alistair Cook, and he's saying, you know, He, there's an LBW chance here. Why don't you put in a leg slip? They've got the man back at a deep back with square leg. So, you know, if you bowl one full on the pads, then he can clip it away for a single and not too much damage done. Or you can bang in a short one and he can be caught on the deep back with square leg boundary. And you could see Alistair's mind as former captain just ticking, and as an opening batsman as well, just ticking over, thinking, yeah, there's danger. And South is a class bowler as well. And he was bowling wide of off stump. And then he bowled the straight delivery. Okay, it was marginal. It was clipping the top of leg stump. It was umpire's call. But so, what about Alex Lees's setup?
Well, that dismissal had all the kind of similarities of the way Kemar Roach got him in the Caribbean, actually.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah. I mean, Alex Lees is the opposite to Zach Crawley. Funnily enough, I was watching both of them bat with Ian Bell, and we were talking about the art of batting and the art of shot selection. And actually, we were sort of saying that in some ways, it's better having less shots, as in an Alistair Cook, than more shots, as in an Ollie Pope or a Zach Crawley. Because, you know, if a ball comes down and you've got so much ability, talent, skill, as, you know, the likes Crawley have, Pope has, sometimes you've got two or three options for the ball coming down. And that is a problem in itself because you have to choose the right option and sometimes they don't. Whereas if you're a more limited player, you stick to your basics and you can be more successful with just sort of three or four shots. And of course, Alistair Cook had an incredibly productive career with just basically three shots. He couldn't drive the ball. He worked it through the leg side and he had a pull and a cut and basically that was it. But in a way, that's quite a good basic game. It's got offside and leg side properties, and it's got a kind of control and a compactness about it. Unfortunately, with Lees, he hasn't even got, to my mind, he hasn't even got the Alistair Cook range. He's even more limited. And I find his, obviously, he's resolute. He's got a reasonable defence. But I tell you that I think the weakness with his batting, it's very stiff. So when he plays forward, his front leg is almost rigid. And you need a bit, as a batsman, you need a little bit of give. You need a little bit of flexibility to be able to ride a ball or steer it somewhere or glance it or, you know, time it. You need that sort of dynamic nature of your body, which he doesn't have. He's too rigid. And in a way, you know, that's partly why he was out in the end. Just shuffling across, playing a rather rigid leg stump sort of clip and missed it and went and departed. So I just think he's a very restricted player and he's a guy that is never going to really pose the bowl as a problem, I would say.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You play at Test match level, you really do get the focus on you full beam, and you know, any weaknesses that you have are exposed, especially with class bowlers. And we've seen lots of class bowlers. Saw some in the Caribbean, and we're seeing some here as well. Of course, we saw the Australians exploit England's weakness with the bat in Australia in the winter. So wither this Test match. I mean, it's bounding along. There's some bad weather forecast for sort of last part of Saturday, possibly into Sunday, possibly Monday
I'm
as well.
I'm suspecting that some of the England and New Zealand players have got tickets for the big pageant.
Well, I mean, this could be a short test match, couldn't it? And I mean, unless, of course, New Zealand just sort of put the pitch, conditions, whatever, in some sort of perspective tomorrow and just sort of bat properly and just calm everything down, as it looked indeed, as though, you know, both the batters were in that middle session of the day when, you know, very few wickets fell and runs were being scored. So, you know, where's this game going? Where's the balance of power? England might get a small lead, mightn't they? 116 for 7, so they've got three wickets left.
Yeah,
they're 16 runs behind. But basically, going to be a one innings test match. One thing we haven't talked about so far, you know, Matt Parkinson. What a day he had. I mean, woke up in the Manchester area, and then, you know, if you'd said to him, Matt, tonight you might have your pads on about to bat for England at Lord's, because I mean, he must have been scrambling for his pads there towards the end with England losing all those wickets. He got to the ground and he probably thought, oh yeah, I won't have to be involved today, but he'd been in his kit, presumably looking to find out where his pads on, because there was a chance he was going to bat before the close of play. What a bizarre day, you know, it's been for him. What a strange day it's been for at Lord's in general. Anyone who turned up today actually certainly had their money's worth. You know, people sort of talk about the price the tickets, and actually Lord's was quite full today. It didn't look as though there were too many spaces around the ground, but I mean, you certainly had your money's worth today. But if you've got a ticket for Sunday, but, you know, possibly even Saturday, I don't know, you might be shortchanged. remarkable start to the test match summer, Yoz.
You know, tomorrow will be different because you feel the batsmen will get stuck in a bit more, and you've got to do is make these fast bowlers who are very good bowl second, third, fourth spells, and, you know, with a softer ball. So it's duty bound on the batsman to just try and stay in a bit longer, and it will get easier, undoubtedly, and the bowlers will get tired. And, you know, England bowlers have got to come out and bowl again tomorrow morning, soon after probably the start of play, depending on how long the last three wickets last. Bowlers always hate that, so the chances are they won't be quite as successful second time round. The New Zealanders have had a bit of a look at Potts, so they know what he's about. He might be struggling with his calf, I suppose, or his cramp or whatever. He went off with cramp, didn't he, towards the end? And I think that was probably a product of the excitement of the occasion. Lord's first test match, four wickets. Inevitably, it's going to creep into your body, and you know, the adrenaline has kept you going, but in the end, the body says no for a bit. But I reckon he'll be fine. But it obviously will be a bit of a concern that they're going to be getting some fluids in. Actually, you know, I'm doing this other podcast, as you know, at the moment, the barest of margins, and the next episode is all about what bowlers are supposed to eat and what they should eat and what they should drink. And one of the pieces of advice from the England nutritionist Emma Gardner is eat more than you think you need as a bowler and drink more. So that will be a lesson, I think, that Potts learns very quickly.
Well, I'm not going to predict how this game is going to pan out. I mean, I have to say, when England were sailing along, when they were moving up towards 90 for two, something like that, you thought, well, there's only one way this game can possibly go. You know, Joe Root's going to get a big score, perhaps Ben Stokes, Bairstow to come, England to get a decent lead and put pressure on New Zealand. But what a dramatic turnaround in the last part of the day. Who knows where we'll be this time tomorrow in terms of the game, but we will review it for you and we'll speak to you then. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.